Hi everybody, and a warm welcome to a brand new episode, The Joy of Logistics. And just in case, if you're tuning in the first time and you don't know myself, please let me introduce myself real quick. My name is Christoph. I studied logistics, and I'm also now working in the logistics industry, especially global air and ocean freight for this year, the summer, it's going to be one decade exactly. And the reason why I came up with the Joy of Logistics podcast is simply because there are so many interested logistics folks out there that also love to learn. Just like myself, I continue to learn each and every day. And what I've also noticed throughout the pandemic, many people were taken by surprise by logistics and, you know, just don't know all the tools that are available out there. And I thought, hey, that's exactly a great opportunity for me and for the Joy of Logistics, because what this podcast is all about is just like my posts on LinkedIn that you find up there under the hashtag Planet Logistics, is I want to share awareness. And I want to, this is also the intention for the podcast, to be an educational platform for interested people, to listen to outstanding people, outstanding companies with outside-of-the-box solutions and products that will not only make each and everybody's lives easier, but also just provide some thoughts for food, the other way around, food for thought. Yeah, that's basically why I'm doing this. And I thought, hey, Christoph, you don't have to know everything by yourself, right? And how can I? It's next to impossible. And this is why I always invite interesting and interested guests that talk with me. And with that being said, let's just cut straight to the bone, so to speak. As you've seen, today's episode is the title, Let's Audit Ocean Freight. And I've been reading a lot, been following a lot content on that. And I'm very honored today that I'm able to welcome a real Hollywood star in logistics and in the maritime industry. A lot of knowledge. So I hope you have your pen and paper ready. With that being said, let me welcome Steve. Thank you so much for taking your time. Warm welcome. Thank you for being here.
Hi, Christoph. Hollywood. Oh boy, I tell you, you're really pandering to my well-worn ego here. So congratulations on you. Congratulations on your decade plus. It's an honor to be here with you today.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate you taking the time. And many folks are joining us today, and there is also some people in there that are maybe not as deep in the industry as you and I are. I think it's best if I pass the mic right on to you, Steve. If you just tell us a little bit what you're doing and what an ocean audit actually is.
Well, Christoph, before I do that, you know, I have to say I've been on TV a lot, and I've done so many wonderful meetings on LinkedIn and broadcast networks around the globe on the topic of ocean freight. And to be here with you is really an honor. You've done amazing things with Planet Logistics, and the fact that you're one of the, you know, unfortunately, we're a small breed. You know, there are not a lot of us that get up there and talk about the industry. And so I really applaud you on that. And I also want to say that this is probably one of the only times where the two people on the show have both had pocket squares. So I want to appreciate your sense of style and grace that you bring today. So thank you again for having me.
Thank you. And I just returned that right over. That's absolutely, absolutely mutual. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you for the praise and the positive feedback. I highly appreciate it, Steve. And likewise, by the way, you also help interested folks, especially on LinkedIn, a lot with just food for thought and think about your current procedure and what's going on.
Yeah, you know, I thought a lot about what you just said in your opening remarks, and you know, I'm still so, oh God, I'm so fired up. You know, having recently come back from the Trans-Pacific Maritime Meetings put on by the S&P Global Market Intelligence JOC folks, it was, you know, a very intriguing show, exhibit, conference, symposium, I guess you call it, right? On both ends of the pond. I think that the interesting thing I took away from it and why I'm so, you know, fired up is that so many people were looking for an education. So many people are new to our industry. Right. You know, I did a study, I want to say I did a study about 2 years ago. I think I did it when I was doing a CNBC podcast or broadcast with the folks over there. And we talked about how a lot of times in logistics, right, we're reactionary. We don't get ahead of the curve, you know, to use that kind of American phrase that we like to use, getting ahead of the curve, getting ahead of the problem. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the opportunities is the fact that, you know, when I did my study on LinkedIn, for example, I found that out of, say, 200,000 or 300,000 global men and women that had logistics in their title or supply chain or traffic manager or import manager or logistics manager, titles of these sort, right? Which are the mechanisms that turn and make the engine work in supply chain. Out of these 300,000 people, 15, 20%, I think it was 14 to 18%, if I recall the number, they were new in their role within 6 months, right? So they're all coming in, and they were all coming in, guess what, right? At that very famous time that I termed Containergeddon, right? So they're all coming into these new roles, either pre or post Containergeddon. And, you know, I think that they just got hit with a wall, like a tsunami of, you know, ocean freight-itis, if I'll call it that. And I think that the challenge for a lot of men and women in logistics back in 2021 and still today is we still have, unfortunately, kind of what I like to refer to as the fox guarding the henhouse type effect, in especially in sea freight, right? So let's take it down. Let's break it down, right? So let's say, you know, you're in Europe, I'm in the US, you know, we interview a new logistics manager. You know, unless he or she has a incredibly robust personal network made up of other logistics managers, who is he or she going to get most of the information from to make well informed decisions, to make vendor decisions, to make audit decisions? It's going to come from, guess what, right? The freight forwarder or the VOCC. So I like to think that, you know, as you and I engage in this great conversation, and again, I don't want to monopolize the first part of this here, but I think this is a really important setup in terms of what your audience is experiencing, is that unfortunately we get a lot of our information from external sources such as the freight forwarder community and the direct ocean carrier community. And I might add, one big part of what I want to talk about today is a lot of the bad press, bad malformed media that is throwing out, especially into the American markets, which also carries into the international markets. So, for example, the bad press that we're getting now, not Ocean Audit, of course, but the bad press that is coming out in general is, you know, Federal Maritime Commission jumps in and saves the day. Federal Maritime Commission ready to refund, you know, beneficial cargo owners on detention demurrage. If I get one thing across in our dialogue today, it's the worst possible headline, the furthest from the truth that the FMC or any regulatory body that's government related is in the quote unquote refund business. I think that importers and exporters are getting hit with just really bad news that the administration, the political administrations are trying to get ahead of this. And quite honestly, I love the media brethren that, you know, I talk to and share space with. And some of them do a fine job, you know, with the neutral facts of what's happening in the world of sea freight and demurrage, detention, remediation. Others go for really provocative headlines, you know, FMC saves the day. And it's unfortunately, you know, part of the culture that we have here, you know, in my neck of the woods, where, you know, it's you sell on the news, right? You know, in other words, if you have, if you're holding a stock, and mm-hmm. let's say the bad news comes out on that, let's say the stock is wonderful, right? But bad news comes out, oh, oil might go down, you know, 10%, mm-hmm. right? So that stock price goes down plummeting, even though that stock is really good, right? Because people are reactionary, right? They want to react on it. And so one of the biggest challenges right now that I'm working on, and especially as I gear to a show I'm doing this Friday on LinkedIn, is, you know, I want to be the insider. I want to be able to give your clients, your audience, you know, the real scoop on what's happening and help them avoid the clutter of making the errors of chasing pipe dreams. And so I think that's a good start to our call today, to our conversation today, Christoph. What do you think?
Absolutely, Steve. Absolutely. And I couldn't agree more. I really couldn't agree more. And although the media coverage over here in Europe, in terms of the logistics industry, has somewhat decreased compared to Containergeddon slash the pandemic or the logistics pandemic, basically with the Suez Canal and whatever. But I happen to see exactly the same thing out here as well. I mean, doom and gloom, and you know, and you have the shipping lines are so greedy and whatever, and we have the Suez Canal, you know, almost like a conspiracy theory, evergreen behind everything, blah 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 blah. What I also see, and that's also because I'm working in the forwarding industry, also when I talk a lot with clients, no matter how long they're in industry, whether they are just joining or taking over this role, or whether they're actually someone working for, I don't know, 40 plus years in this industry and have seen something, you know, and I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, by the way. It's just how it is. When I consult them and they call me up, oh, Christoph, you know, I have an inquiry, I have a project going to wherever, can you help me out here? And oftentimes I see people throwing out words and using terms without really understanding what they're actually meaning, what is actually standing behind them. So I think we are both on the same mission here in terms of educating people and shine a light on knowledge that they need, that they require, that they also require not only on the daily business, but also in terms of how to reshape the future with everything being shaking up these days so fast, literally overnight. I think that's really, really a vital point. So, yeah.
Well, I think that, like you said, right, it's one of the things that really goes into play here is, you know, I'm so fortunate, right? I created my niche some 35 plus years ago. You know, I have these 40,000 outlier hours and looking at the industry. And I mean, you know, it's interesting, right? I had a chance to talk to Lars Jensen at the TPM. You know, we had a chance to sit down for a few minutes and talk about some mm-hmm. trends. And I really like being around Lars a lot, right? And a lot of times, you know, I look at us, right? And I've never said this publicly. I mean, my love for the guy is paramount. I have tremendous respect for Lars. But, you know, mm-hmm. Lars and I couldn't be further more different, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Lars is, you know, very analytical and he approaches everything very... you know, in a very professional, you know, well, European, Danish-centric way where he's very precise. And mm-hmm. I think that I tend to look at the dark alleys. I like to look at the angles. I like to look at the stories behind the scenes that are going to come up and creep up and be part of your subculture, right? Lars will talk about the statistics and his personal trend on where a market's going. But I think that there are so many side stories in the sea freight industry that are not told that I'm privileged, and you are as well, you know, to have the solidarity of a voice that can go out to the market and explain things in a very precise, kind of neutral way. And I think that's, you know, one of the great things about your podcast is you're able to do that. And so I see that as a strength. I also see it as an incredible education tool. You know, one of the things that came out from the Trans-Pacific Maritime Conference was this whole concept of kind of an academy of training, of seminars and series of bringing all these great new men and women that are in new roles up to speed on duties and customs procedures and auditing and sea freight negotiation and, you know, even basics of, selling and problem solving and listening skills, right? These are all vital keys and components that, you know, unfortunately in our digital age, we've missed out a lot on now, but I do think, you know, and it's so great that we have a European audience today because some of my largest clients are in Europe. The thing I wanted to impress on the audience is that the theme of TPM was not only education, but also cost recovery, right? And cost avoidance. Right. I think that the audience in general, importers, exporters, was so just awestruck about how fast and how deep container getting hit. Certainly, in talking to, I have 20 of the Fortune 100 as clients, I'm privileged. And in talking to those leaders, as well as others in the top S&P 500, you know, Fortune 500, excuse me, I learned that well over 90% of these logistics teams had incredible pressure, right, from their CFOs, from their controllers, on the cost spend that accrued through container getting. They were not well, the C-level folks were not well ready, not well versed for what happened. You can see this clearly in the fact that retailers like, you know, Home Depot or Costco or, you know, just went out and at no Katie bar the door, went out and chartered vessels at whatever the cost was, right? And now you see some of those leases being unwinded. I think Costco, if I recall, did, and you know, at great expense to them, right? Because it was a trigger reaction that they had to get in the market. Now, I don't blame them, or I don't applaud them, or blame them for how they made that decision. But the truth is that everything has a price. Now, in my humble opinion, right, there's no bigger sign of danger, right, when the financial barometer goes off the deep end, and these CFOs and controllers are coming into our logistics leaders and logistics suites, and just really just taking them to task. You know, why is this happening? Why can't you do something about it? Can't you get our rates down? And I have a slide. I don't have it ready for today's show, but I have a slide that talks about ocean freight rates on average in, say, 2019. Let's just call it a flat $2,000, right? An FEU. That's pretty good. And then I have a comparison in 20 parts of 21 and 22, where I show that at $25,000 a container, right? And then if you look at the average refund or the average overcharge on an ocean invoice back in 2019 or 2020, you know, it might've been a couple hundred dollars here, a couple hundred dollars there. And, you know, over the number of TEU, FEU, the number of invoices that are wrong, even back in 2019, you know, at the time, Maersk's chairman was CEO was, you know, Søren Skou, who we know. Retired, you know, went on, and now we have Vincent Clerc. But Maersk, I have a video of Søren Skou coming out in public saying that over 12% of Maersk invoices were incorrect, and how embarrassed he was about that. And that was before container getting, right? And again, not picking on Maersk. I love them. You know, they're great, as I do all my the vendors that we get refunds for. But the point I want to make is that in 2021 and 2022, you start to see refunds of 1,000 a container, or 2,000 a container, or 3,000 a container. And then you start to look at the importers FEU volumes, and you say, well, geez, you know, normally somebody with a few hundred containers, it's very rare, it would have been very, very rare in the last 20 years for me to find a six-figure refund for someone that had a few hundred containers. Now, it just takes about 40 containers being grossly misrated to add up to a six-figure refund, approximately. You follow where I'm going with this, right?
Yeah, sure. Wow.
And the magnitude of it is that you look at the recovery and the fact that there was a whole new dimension, mm-hmm. almost like the Twilight Zone of how the pricing mm-hmm. went into play to make these invoices incorrect. So, I mean, I've never seen it before. I mean, I'm a big believer of, I've studied the airline pricing for years, and I've always been shocked about how do airlines know so well, like on a Friday night to take the prices up a couple hundred bucks and on Tuesday to lower them. And on Sunday night, it's always more expensive. And then I see the pricing trends of these kind of trends start to leak into ocean during Containergeddon, where most of my clients that I just described in that Fortune 100, Fortune 500, you know, they'll have a rate sheet from, you know, forward to XYZ, you know, good from July 1st to July 7th, and then a new sheet from July 7th to July 14th, and so on and so forth. And the delta, right, in some of the rate differentials on these rate sheets could be thousands because, you know, you're talking about mm-hmm. a surcharge or a premium or, you know, MSC's double diamond service or black service, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, what is this? It's like the American Express Centurion card, you know, they're offering, you know, is it like Delta Sky Miles where you're platinum medallion or a diamond medallion? And it's like, I started to think of it like, it was the first time ever in my 40 years in the industry where I started to think like, geez, you know, I got to change my branding. This branding that these ocean vendors have is fantastic, right? It's like I'm a kid in a candy store. Somebody says, well, Steve, Steve, we think we might have a problem with our invoices from Ford or XYZ or from Evergreen or from Hyundai. Oh, really? Yeah. And, you know, here I am sitting there knowing full well that, you know, almost 25 to 40% of invoices, right, in 21 and 22 had something that could be corrected. And so I guess my thematic message to the audience is that, believe it or not, and this is something that you will never, never, ever, ever read in the media, unless you're reading a highly technical trade paper or, and this is something that most ocean vendors won't share with you, right? Because every single one of them has a rule in their tariff that says, hey, if you detect a overcharge from the last 3 years, you know, we're mm-hmm. still going to refund you as long as you can, you know, present it to us and validate it, right? So, you know, in a nutshell, right, my main mission in life is to use the kind of this global 3 year, in some parts of the world, it's even longer, which is great. Mm-hmm. You know, Europe is incredible on, you know, being able to recover lost ocean revenue for, you know, many years from the date of receipt. So the ocean environment is really unique. Unlike parcel or trucking or rail freight, where you can recover these overcharges for the last three and a half years. Now, I will say this. Here's one of my thought process on the fact that some media attention is good on this, right? So even though the American media totally gets the message wrong on what the, say, the Biden administration or the Federal Maritime Commission can do for beneficial cargo owners, one of the things that is a truism is it does put the whole concept of cost recovery in the public eye day in and day out, right? So the nice thing is that translates to the fact that, well, okay, they keep talking about detention and demurrage, but mm-hmm. I'm here to tell you that, in my humble opinion, detention and demurrage is actually, they're some of the easier recoveries to make, but I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about core ocean freight. You know, what was the base charge from, you know, Shanghai to Rotterdam or Shanghai to La Havre or Shanghai to New York or Shanghai to Miami? All those are recoverable, as well as detention demurrage. Mm-hmm. Now, one last point about the media frenzy on what the FMC can do. You know, I just saw a headline the other day. FMC adds a refunding capability to its, they call it charge complaint. You know, I call mm-hmm. it a refund claim. The FMC mm-hmm. calls it a charge complaint. It's just their technical way. Mm-hmm. First off, it's interesting, right? Since July of 2022, get this, I'm about to disclose right, to the global audience here, that the amount that the FMC has helped BCOs recover on these charge complaints. Now, I'm not talking about FMC attorney investigated cases where they go after Hapag Lloyd on, say, a theme of a practice on detention demurrage. I'm talking about specific beneficial cargo owners getting specific recoveries through this charge complaint process that the government has set up. I almost can't even say the number. So since July of 2022, the FMC is proud to announce that they've helped get $700,000 refunded to BCOs on detention and demurrage through this charge complaint or claims process. Now, to put that in a little bit of context, just yesterday alone from a major European freight forwarder, I was able to secure a $60,000 recovery on detention demurrage in 24 hours. So in other words, I got 10% approximately, right, of what the FMC's glorified process did, and I did it in one day. Wow. And that's how absurd the process is. Let me tell you something, right? Detention and demurrage, the first thing that just came to my mind as I said that is, you know, we had in America, right, the gold rush, where, you know, you had these miners with gritty beards and, you know, rucksacks and pickaxes coming to California and digging for gold. Right. This is the new gold rush. The incredible sins of Containergeddon and the recoveries of detention and demurrage, in my humble opinion, seem to be just sitting there like gold ready to be pickaxed by one of these gritty miners. So to me, I believe that the public in general, whether it's in the US, Asia, EMEA, Europe, I think that the public is being a little bit misled. And I think, I also think, and this is a big caveat, is interestingly, right, there are a type of recovery in detention in per diem in detention here in the U.S. when the container leaves the terminal and is out for too long and the client gets billed. Well, typically in the U.S., right, that's been a bill from the terminal operator or the pass through to the carrier directly to the BCO's trucker, right, the dray person. Right. Now, interestingly, quietly, you know, Maersk came out recently and said, well, you know, we want to try to comply with the Federal Maritime Commission rules. So instead of billing the trucker, we'll bill the BCO directly. Oh, if you still want us to bill your trucker, we'll kind of be okay with that. And we'll bill the trucker. But we'd like to change our process and bill the BCO directly. Well, there's a technique, and I won't spend too much time on it. I won't actually get into it. But there's actually a better technique if the bill goes to the trucker, because you have more – right now the way the rules are written on defending detention,
right,
you almost have more firepower if the bill goes to the truck line, you know, in terms of the kind of the validation or dispute process. Now, once that goes directly to the beneficial cargo owner, it's my humble opinion – that creates a advantage to the direct carrier to in the invoicing process and the perhaps getting paid for something that they shouldn't have been paid on. So these are some of the theories, not theories, but these are some of the actual practices that we're putting in play to help clients identify these incredibly lost bogeys, Christoph, that belong back to their working capital.
Right. Because as you already alluded to, Steve, and first of all, thank you so much for this little deep dive here. As you already alluded to, you know, if we're not talking about $100 on the container anymore, but we are talking about 10 times, I don't know, even 15 times what a container used to cost back in the day, and which is now also coming back to that level again. But reason I'm pointing this out once again is, it just takes a huge amount of working capital out of your organization, for sure. So, appreciate your work. And before I'm going to raise a question. I just want to give a quick shout out here to the audience. Casey, thank you so much for joining us. Glad having you. Casey wrote a comment. Steve, hitting the nail on the head. Super important for professionals in this industry to do research and to dive into what's going on via multiple modes, news, network, insiders, podcasts like this, etc. Lots of buzzwords being tossed out there for press. Thank you, Casey. Absolutely correct. This is exactly why we're doing what we're doing today. Thank you.
Nice comment, Casey. I totally agree. You know, it's a, I think it's really interesting aspect of the fact that these professionals like Casey and who she's pointing out need to do that research, because honestly, the thing about the issue at hand here is, although you know, we had $21,000, $30,000 rates, right? Rates have come down. And so I think that it's almost like a good crisis management team, right? I remember years and years ago when I was in my teens, I remember Pepsi did an ad with Michael Jackson, right? And Michael Jackson was injured in the shooting of this ad. He had some injuries to him that were, you know, fairly serious. And, you know, so, you know, Pepsi has to go into crisis management mode. Well, there was a mistake here, there was a mistake there. I think that there's some crisis management that takes place in the ocean industry. Like, for example, right now, you know, curious minds want to kind of forget the past, right? So the idea is that the ocean vendors, you know, you still see the remnants of their success from Containergeddon with Costco's recent earnings. And the fact that if the ocean vendors can get past the next couple years, then that's less that they have to refund from the sins of being overbuilt. And I'm not talking about maliciously being overbuilt. I'm talking about the fact that the velocity of what happened during the pandemic cannot be overstated. The fact that invoices were issued like cotton candy, right, at an amusement park, or just being handed out like Tic Tacs, you know, at a bad breath convention, right? It's like, it was just amazing how quickly these invoices went out. And guess what? In order to get the cargo released, you had to pay them. So the juxtaposition here is that everybody, every importer or exporter within the sound of my voice, you don't necessarily have to call me at Ocean Audit, but if you can ingrain yourself to look back on the last 3 years of your invoicing, and you know, you see something for 20,000 and 20,000 and 20,000, all of a sudden you see something for 40,000. Hey, pull it out, challenge it, question it. You know, if you don't understand it, contact someone like Christoph or myself, or you know, your own auditor, right? I have a lot of insight on this, and I'm glad to help anyone. But the point is that a lot of what you can do, you can self-heal and correct yourself, even by setting up, going forward, simple spreadsheets, right, that take, you know, the ocean freight you paid, the CBMs in it, and, you know, okay, this, you know, these 100 containers had an average cost of, you know, $40 a CBM, $40 a CBM. All of a sudden you get to one that's $100 a CBM. Well, guess what, right? That's the one that's the outlier. That's the problem one that you have. And if you can get that money back, and it's your money, you've been funded, you know, 2 years worth of office supplies, 8 years worth of coffee, you know, 4 years worth of, you know, WMS research subscription. I don't know what it is, but all this money is available, and it's just right at the touch of the button, from a logistics manager to an AP manager to a procurement manager. And the thing is, it's a simple process. Everyone makes this like this is like splitting molecules or nuclear physics. Let me tell you something. I believe that there are five simple steps towards these gross refund recoveries that any organization can latch onto. And even if you only do one or two of them, like I just suggested, taking a sample or looking back, you know, don't think just because the invoice is 10 months old or 2 years old that you have to live for the future. There's nothing wrong with projecting and going back and collecting a refund that's, you know, a year old, 2 years old, even 3 years old. Heck, I just had a refund. I'm going to disclose something to the audience. I won't tell the client. But I just had a $100,000 refund from 2014 that the vendor agreed to refund because they had a great relationship with the BCO, right? Now, they didn't have to refund it. They could have said, well, Steve, you know, this is time barred and it's too old. But we proved the point. We showed the payment and it was 9 years old. And this is one of the top U.S. Shippers. And so you can imagine, right, when they got this refund, it's almost like the next thing they would ask me is, okay, Steve, you know, can you walk on water? You know, what can you do next? And, you know, I'm thrilled to support these clients because my role, I look at my role as I said, differently than, say, someone like Lars Jensen, who I love, right? Mm-hmm. So Lars is, I think I finally realized how to separate the two of us. Right. So Lars is expert. Lars is technical. I love that. Right. Me, I'm artsy fartsy. I'm and I'm science. Right. I'm the blend of an amalgam of taking the operational side and the daring, creative, cool side and the finance side and melding them together. There's nothing, you know, I always struggle with how to present myself. But I do know this. I do know that the opportunity at hand that most BCOs have does tend to resonate into that art and science kind of boutique, right? And if you can achieve that, and let me tell you the last thing, I'm glad to take any questions as well from our wonderful audience that you have. But I think here's one of the things that most people fail to grasp when it comes to, they look at what I do and they think, okay, this is a cash back operation. This is a money grab on overpayments. This is a money grab on correcting bad invoices. Mm-hmm. And while that is true that we're getting these funds back to working capital that can be repurposed, it's not that at all. What it does is it actually is a tool to enhance the relationship between the BCO and the vendor. Because think of it, if it was HAPAG, if it was DHL, if it was whoever causing the error to occur, that causes overbilling. If DHL and the BCO have a great relationship, right, that's going to only make it better if we've eliminated the source or the root cause of the problem. And DHL can understand, oh, yeah, we billed that premium when we had an NAC rate as opposed to an FAK rate, or we billed that premium at the wrong date and time. And that helps their operational systems do a better job for the BCO. And guess what? Then the BCO has a more relaxed attitude, it's the wrong word. But then the BCO understands that, hey, someone's looking over this stuff. Someone's looking over the remediation of the invoice maybe before it's released. And, you know, like I used to work for Sealand in Asia back in the day. And even when we would release an invoice, we would actually put like a gold sticker on it, you know, saying this was professionally audited by Sealand's, you know, pre-audit team. And so, you know, it would be unheard of, right, back in the 80s to have this kind of leakage go out. Now, I talked to the CEO of one of the top 10 ocean vendors in the world. I won't say who, but he told me that, Steve, we admire what you do, and we have no problem issuing refunds to the BCOs, but we are not going to be the BCO's back office accounting department. And, you know, when he said that to me, all kind of bells and whistles went off in my mind. And that, to me, convinced me that I personally, Steve Ferrer in Ocean Audit, was in the right space to be the advocate or the fighting agent for these BCOs. Because it's not that the ocean vendor is not going to say, oh, you know, you paid us $10,000 too much. I mean, don't get me wrong. I have seen where vendors have done that, but it's far and few between. I think the attitude of this CEO, when he said, hey, it's a self-service environment. Clients want a refund. They have to come to us and document it. Mm-hmm. And that is filled with two things. One is most BCOs don't know the lay of the land, how to document it. Oh yeah, they can say, build it 10,000, should be 8,000. Build it 20,000, should be, you know, 15,000. But many BCOs will do just that. And they'll give Maersk or CMA or Evergreen or HAPAG, you know, a thumbnail of why the refund exists. And guess what? 80% of the time, the ocean vendor is going to come back and deny that. Deny. Because unless the ocean carrier, remember, on their side of things as well, at the ocean vendor, they're extremely stressed as well. They're dealing with all these issues. They're dealing with the fact that they've got to be more regulated mm-hmm. to try to keep up with the American FMC. They're getting hammered on the fact that they are making all these errors. And when they get a dispute, you know, what's the easiest thing to do if you get a dispute that doesn't look good? Deny, right? And so we see this constantly. It's denyism until the BCO gives up on the refund opportunity. And then the thing dies. And guess what? Those treasures that belong to you, Heineken or IKEA or any BCO, those beautiful treasures called money stay in the bank account of the transportation provider. So that is one of the biggest issues right now that we see in the industry, Christoph. Mm-hmm.
And a quick question on that, Steve, because while you were sharing your experiences, I thought, okay, let's just assume we maybe have not such a big of a BCO listening to this, right? But maybe a small mom and pop shop. And maybe they're like, okay, yeah, makes sense what Steve's saying. Steve, what would you say maybe the three keys or points to look out for when to suspect a wrong invoice? What would you say?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, I go back to the leverage that the deleveraging of what we saw in the percentage of invoice errors over the years, right? So in the early 2000s, we saw a small amount of errors. And then we saw that number creep up as we got into more deregulation. And so I think that the issue is, number one, for 2021, 2022, and 2023, it's probably fair to say that you as a BCO, whether you're a small mom and pop or medium size or even large, is I call everything kind of by a traffic light system, red light, yellow light, green light. And I think that many BCOs are in that kind of yellow light, green light, yellow light, red light scenario where they're due 2 to 3 or 2 to 4% of their ocean spend has been overbilled. So I think the first takeaway in general from a macro perspective is to a BCO is that you should really look at the expenses from 21, 22, and 23, because there's a good chance if you take the aggregate amount of sea freight that you spent, you're going to get 2 to 3% of that as a refund. So I think that's job number one. It's a macro concept. So they have to know that going into it. Job number two or role number two, you know, certainly we have a lot of BCOs, right, that have, for example, documented on their internal lifting reports or internal operational reports, or even an email where they've questioned, hey, you know, the bill on this one was 23,000. It looks like our rate says 21,000. So there's some simple kind of, we call it cherry-picked opportunities that are probably residing right under your noses, right under your thumbs, that you can actually look back and say, okay, hey, yeah, we did forget about those, but, you know, Steve and Christoph did this seminar, and, you know, let's go back and look at the invoices we questioned, but we didn't get compensated on. So I think that's an easy fix, right? Mm-hmm. And then third, I think that the next best thing that we see in the industry, and again, it's not, I don't want to make this come across as self-promotion, but, you know, one of the things that clients can do now is, you know, for example, we have a tool at a website I developed called vessel.voyage, and it's actually a real-time pre-audit that identifies and corrects the invoice error before the invoice is paid. Wow. And so it's a great way to avoid cost and to keep the ocean vendor or vendors on the straight and narrow. And the nice thing about this pre-audit, you know, Vessel Voyage, is it basically is free. And the reason, let me explain that for a second. So if you take the topic at hand, we have, there's two two types of auditing in the ocean industry that should be done by all BCOs, mm-hmm. post-audit and pre-audit. So the post-audit covers the last 3 years. Invoices, think of invoices you've already paid as being eligible for post-audit. And post-audit simply means that the invoice is reviewed and you will get a supplemental refund from the ocean vendor that charge. So now let's take this pot of gold. Let's say that you decide to post-audit the last 3 years of ocean freight. You may get back, say, $100,000 or $200,000, however the quantum is. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a percentage of that that the auditor keeps, right, that you have to pay the auditor. But let's put that aside for a second. So, you know, let's just say that you're splitting the $100,000 50-50, right? So mm-hmm. Now you have this pot of $50,000 that you never had before. Now, then the client can optionally move into the pre-audit, which costs a couple dollars a container. But the point of the matter is that because you're using the old dead money from the post-audit, you can actually fund the pre-audit mm-hmm. gratis, free of charge. And it then becomes really an unbudgeted expense. But the great thing about the pre-audit is it's doing two things. It's making sure that you don't overpay and you don't have any overcharges or refunds due. But you're also giving the ocean carrier the right amount of payment, and you're eliminating the deadly receivable problem that almost 99% of BCOs have, where you get a letter from the freight forwarder or the steamship line, hey, you know, you're 90 days over, you know, over your terms. And, you know, that's the forbidden fruit, right? So mm-hmm. I found a way to cut down on the DSO, the days the sales outstanding, in terms of the remittance, as well as to achieve the veracity of identifying the real-time recovery before the invoice has been paid. And it's illuminating because here's why it's also illuminating. The other thing I found that nobody ever talks about is service contracts, NVOCC service agreements, NVOCC rate agreements, and other kind of rate minutia. They're very poorly authored, in my humble opinion. So in other words, I just recently looked at a Maersk contract, and you know, the contract was so out of whack. Two geographical zones, say out of Taiwan, rated at $10,000 at one for one port in Taiwan, and $5,000 for another port in Taiwan. So in other words, the Taichung to Savannah at $10,000, mm-hmm. Keelung to Savannah at $5,000. The mm-hmm. rates were so out of whack in terms of how they were authored and how they were accepted. So mm-hmm. it's a two-way street, right? Don't get me wrong, right? So Maersk made a mistake, and perhaps the BCO could have beefed up their improvement in terms of how they scoped out the contract. But I will say this, ladies and gentlemen, it's really paramount to look at the way the contracts are written and how each price point on your geographical zones in your container contracts are written, because you may be leaving thousands of dollars on the table through no fault of your own and through no fault of the vendor because the contract was malformed. So it's just another thing, I think, to share with the Planet Logistics audience.
Appreciate it. And dear audience, I hope you're taking notes, because this is high level information Steve is sharing. And Steve, once again, thank you so much for sharing your experience and the knowledge on that. With a look on the clock, we got roughly 10 minutes, 11 minutes left. Just want to pull up real quick another comment from Casey. Casey wrote, here's the thing. Would you personally want to be billed incorrectly or overcharged? Then why should we do that in business? Much like Steve said, this is bettering the relationship by holding each other accountable. Couldn't have said it better, Casey. You're absolutely right. And I do agree as well on that, because I also think that the trust in those partnerships that at points even, are even in place for literally decades, it is so vital to maintain the same eye level, so to speak, right? So this is really a crucial and vital point. Thanks for pointing that out, Casey. Appreciate it.
And Casey, I'd like to add too, Christoph, she makes such a great point because I use this analogy a lot. You know, I think about my own American Express card, right? So for example, if you're a logistics manager, right, and you get billed, $12 bill on American Express, but somehow they coded it wrong and you're not responsible for that. There's a good chance you're going to pick that up in a minute and you're going to be on the phone with American Express over a $12 invoice because it was a missed bill on your own personal Amex card. You know, I will tell you this, right? So you'd say to yourself, well, what's the downside of getting refunds? I would think that, your phone's ringing off the hook and you've got incredible depth and breadth in this industry, Steve. You know, how do you sleep? You must be doing refunds 24/7. And while it's true, I will say this. I think that there's always that logistics manager that might think, well, gee, Steve approached me on getting a refund. And if I let him in, it's going to be a indication on how poorly I might have done my job. What if Steve finds $1 million that I should have found? And I think that in is the crux of the problem, is that job descriptions have been written really poorly in our industry, Christoph, in that I've seen many descriptions where logistics manager is tasked with the auditing. And that shouldn't be the case. He or she should be tasked with finding the auditing capabilities, but not them doing the auditing per se themselves. And I think they get a bad rap. And again, that's where this kind of, trepidation comes into play, where someone might say, oh, geez, if Steve comes in and he finds $1 million, I'm going to lose my job. That's not true at all, because I think that the bottom line is that any C-level guy or gal, once they understand the depth and breadth of the container getting issue and the industry being so fragmented with invoicing, they totally get that any recovery is a good recovery. And actually, what I see is they actually applaud that logistics manager or man or woman as being what we call a maverick, right? To go ahead and to find those tools, like cost recovery tools, to benefit the company's treasury. So I don't want to go over our time, but I thought that was an important point that Casey raised.
Absolutely, absolutely, and thank you for adding this. And I agree, Steve. I mean, like you, like Ocean Audit as a company, you're the experts on that. You really know where to look onto. Whereas I return to the small mom and pop shop who maybe have, a logistics manager and, a procurement manager even at in one person and one position. So those folks oftentimes also do not have the time, and they are focusing, and rightfully so in my opinion, they are focusing on getting the goods, whether it's raw materials or finished products from A to B, right?
Absolutely, 100%. They don't have the bandwidth, and you absolutely nailed it. I've interviewed thousands of them, and from their living room couches in small cities in Maine to the high rises of Mexico City. And I've interviewed all these logistics men and women, and they're sitting at home during the pandemic. Steve, we got to get the goods in. We got to get the goods in. Okay. Mm-hmm. The costs be damned. Right. But you got to pay the piper at some point. And, when you look at simple, beautiful companies that have normal spend any other years, start to have, these double-digit million-dollar spends or triple-digit million-dollar spend in sea freight, something's wrong. Something's rotten in Denmark, right? And so the whole idea behind cost improvement, it seems to be the number one theme of 2023. Now, we don't know, still the jury's still out, right, how container rates will play out the rest of this year.
Right.
I am forecasting a little bit of hell to be taking place come Q3. I think we're in some real surprises where we get another wallop of rate increases and surprises, where that kind of black swan or maybe gray swan, right, comes floating around again. I knock on wood or glass, and I hope that's not the case. But even talking to someone like Lars, when you start to look at the inventories and where things stand, it's possible we can see some more potential increases in spot migration of the contract rates increasing mm-hmm. at volumetric rates. So, you know, I always look at this being good medicine, right? It's like anything else. It's like you go to the doctor and you get blood tests, right? Why wouldn't you go to, you know, the duty drawback person and check your duty and customs rates? Why wouldn't you go to the air freight guy and parcel and get a checkup? Why wouldn't you check up on ocean, right? And it's only because I think we've had this misnomer where, well, there's not really much we can do now. We're trying to, you know, payback's tough on the vendors and, you know, we got to just move forward. And you know, many logistics men and women, right? They want to kind of, you know, move that ball forward and keep up their relationships with the ocean vendors. And I get that. However, while you're doing that, you know, these folks have to continue to be good stewards for their company and make sure that everything that they can recover in terms of the financial quadrant or component is still handled in the professional utmost way. So that's my takeaway.
Appreciate it. Fantastic. And I also appreciate your crystal ball for Q3. Maybe as a finishing question, and you partly also answered that with your crystal ball, but for the future in general, what's your, I wouldn't say prediction, but what type of challenges you see? I mean, we also hear a lot of, you know, digitally forwarding and e-invoicing and everything is more visible and transparent and back and forth. Maybe that's something I'm curious to hear your take on.
Well, here's my cut on it. You know, it's interesting. You know, I started in the ocean industry in 1982. I mean, I go way back, right? And it's been my whole life. I've done nothing but ocean, right? So I'm approaching it with a subject that I feel poignant and intellectually able to give you this answer. And, you know, I've seen so much in play, you know, about EDI. We've seen so much on blockchain. Mm-hmm. We've seen mm-hmm. so much about the Digital Container Shipping Association. We've seen so much about detention, demurrage, and ocean. I think that the wave of the future is that, and you look at some of the dialogues I've been part of and even authored on LinkedIn, and you start talking about detention, demurrage as an example, right? And you have so many differing opinions and so many right opinions, merchant haulage, carrier haulage, you know, timings. I think that my prediction for detention, demurrage is, you know, perhaps at some point we make everything, we go back to a CY, that's container yard to container yard type genre. We give everyone, you know, a blanket amount of free days or they can buy free days. But I think that there's a legitimate, simple solution. You know, if I was in charge of it, which I'm not, but I think there's a legitimate, simple solution to ending some of the bifurcated charges mm-hmm. and challenges that the industry is going through. Remember, and I should have said this to answer your question. I don't want to run over our time. But I think that this industry won't ever say this, but the industry is very satisfied to keep the status quo. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the biggest challenges that mm-hmm. the industry has is we might not repeat, we might not want to solve the problem mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. it's such a darn lucrative industry when we have problems. And that would be my kind of final provocative thought.
That's fantastic. I mean, that's a fantastic final word. Steve, first of all, thank you so much for taking your time, for being on the show today, for sharing your knowledge. Highly appreciated. And I hope the folks in the audience will have written almost a book in terms of your knowledge and your information and wisdom. And speaking for myself, I'd love to have you back on the show because I think there is a lot more to go into detail. But for now, if someone who's listening this, and this will be also available on Spotify throughout the next days, and if someone is listening and is like, wow, this Steve guy, he really got it going, really good points here, how can they contact you and reach out to you?
Yeah, I think that the easiest way is right here on LinkedIn. Steve Ferreira, follow me. You could also email me at stevef@oceanaudit.com. But following me on LinkedIn is always the best bet to get my updated content and consume my thoughts on and videos on where the industry is heading. So I really want to thank you so much for the time that you spent with me today. It was intriguing to be on your show, and I'd love to have you on my show too. So we'll definitely have to do a kind of a reciprocity.
Deal. I'm on it. I'm in, Steve. Thank you so much. And also want to thank the audience. Thank you, everybody, for taking the time for tuning in today. And also for your questions. Thank you so much. And you also find myself on LinkedIn. You'll find the Joy Logistics on YouTube and Spotify. And also on LinkedIn, follow hashtag Planet Logistics. And with that being said, wishing each and everybody a fantastic day. And see you next time.
Thank you, Christoph.
Thank you. Take care.